This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Jonathan Arney. Jonathan is a partner at Shepard Mullin here in Washington, D.C., and Jonathan brings nearly two decades of experience working with GSA, in particular GSA Schedules Program. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, today, you know, Jonathan, it's always interesting to get all kinds of different perspectives on government contracting, government folks and industry folks, and occasionally I get my friends from the private bar to come on and talk, and so it's great to have you here today. And you know, there's been a lot of sort of churn around the GSA Schedules Program as of late with the strategic sourcing, and that issue, the look at horizontal pricing as a policy or not, the GSAR rewrite, which goes to that, how you evaluate price and that sort of thing. So I thought it'd be great to get, as someone who's worked with GSA again for almost two decades, get your perspective on, you know, where things have been and where you see them going right now. So Jonathan, I'll just open up the floor and you can start by talking about where, you know, sort of the big picture. Where are we right now?
That's a dangerously large opening you've just given me.
Well, what are friends for?
Yeah, exactly. There have been a lot of changes. And, you know, I think that many of them have not been good. So I think that's probably the place I need to start. And those of you, at least you know me and some of your listeners probably have heard me before. I'm historically a big fan of the Schedules Program. I have been for years and years, but the current direction is bothering me. So why don't we start with the one that you mentioned about pricing?
One of the things that there's a lot of conversation in the procurement community, and that's focus. Some say a focus on or emphasis on low price technically acceptable. Others, and you know, many in government say no, not we're not really doing that. But LPTA, low price technically acceptable. How does that sort of translate from a GSA, or what are you seeing? Does it translate to the GSA schedules? What are you seeing going on there?
Sure. Well, I guess I wouldn't call it a focus. I would call it more of an infatuation. It seems to me that the GSA Schedules Program has become all about low price and trying to squeeze from the contractors as low a price as possible, putting aside, really, in many cases, the question of value or the question of who can do the job better. I see that again and again. You see it in public ways with things like FSSI, but you see it. You see it more directly when you're dealing day to day with the contracting officers and the contracting specialists, and their total focus during negotiations and renewal negotiations on the price of the product or service, and importantly, the price of the product or services compared to other companies out there. And that, to me, I find particularly interesting. Okay, so years ago, if you tried to compare your prices to another company's in order to show GSA that your prices were fair and reasonable, GSA would immediately say, no, we don't care what other companies sell it for. We only care what you sell your product and service for to your other customers.
Sure.
But now GSA has created, I call it kind of the magic box. They take your prices and they put it into their little magic machine and it compares your prices to other companies. Now, GSA management says that this is just one data point and that it's not meant to do away with value. That's nice on paper, but the truth is that contracting officers are using it instead of value. And differences in terms and conditions and differences in warranty and differences in customer service are coming into play less and less and less.
Well, wouldn't, I mean, I guess, you know, that GSA, that contractors wanted to use that pricing to justify their pricing, wouldn't GSA's, the response from GSA be just, well, hey, you know, we're doing what you wanted us to do?
You know, if GSA were using it fairly and as a two-way street, that would be fine. If GSA said that, yes, this is a data element, we don't want the same product on schedule at drastically different prices, then I get that. That makes sense. But what happens is that's not how it gets translated to the contracting officers or contracting specialists, who in many cases, I personally have seen them using it not as an additional data point, but instead of a proper value analysis. So what happens is companies that offer real value and better service are getting squeezed out, and we're just, you know, again, we're just looking for the lowest price. And at the end of the day, the government ends up paying more money.
Why is that?
Well, for the same reason where if you've ever gone and you bought the cheapest service available versus a more valuable service, the more valuable service often is better. In the legal profession, we care a lot about value over price, incidentally. So this is an issue. This is an issue that I'm quite familiar with.
All right.
As are you, as I recall.
Well, yeah, I guess you know, one of the things that in talk continuing this, you know, focus on low price, technically acceptable, or just the with regard to low price, does it really, you know? And I'd like to get your thoughts on this because I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and it's really, you know, GSA historically has been a market maker. What do I mean by that? That means that creates, it has historically been very good at creating contracting programs like the GSA schedules where customer agencies who hold real requirements and contractors can compete, acquire, you know, evaluate on whatever terms they want to evaluate in terms of best value, and acquire the services or products to support mission requirements. You know, Alliant, all those other Alliant, the GWACs are the same thing. They create a marketplace for customer agencies and contractors to conduct business. You know, this focus on price, you know, I guess the question is, does it really make sense when you don't hold requirements that you're where you really are trying to create a framework through which people can compete at the order level, given, especially given the statutory and regulatory competition requirements?
Well, that's a very good point, Roger. I mean, it ignores that these are highly competitive procurements at the task order level, right? That's where the competition occurs, and everyone knows the GSA scheduled price is the ceiling price anyway, and you have to,
as it is on all multiple work contracts,
exactly.
GWACs, MACs, all those.
Exactly, and some of the things you see going on with GSA ignores the fact that that's where the competition takes place at the order level, and that's where it should take place. But you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, as a taxpayer, I am all for trying to reduce prices.
Oh, absolutely.
That makes perfect sense, and that is within GSA's mission, and they should be doing it, and they are, but there has to be, again, it comes back to value, there has to be some logic and some balance to the way they do it, because nobody wants, again, no one wants our rocket ships being launched with the cheapest solid fuel rocket motor, and likewise, nobody wants the services they buy through the schedule to be the cheapest. They want them to be the best and the most valuable. That's what gets lost in the mix of price, price, price.
Right. Well, that's like I often say, like nobody wants low price, technically acceptable cybersecurity, right?
Right, right. Or doctor, or I'd like to say lawyer, incidentally.
Okay.
But yeah,
yes.
No, that's exactly right. It can't only be about price, but over and over again, I'm seeing it only be about price.
Well, doesn't it, you know, just be philosophical? It really it's about where the price point you're focusing on. And it seems to me that what you're telling me is that GSA is focusing on a price point at the contract level rather than looking at, you know, the program as a framework. Again, using that word, a framework through which agencies can save time and money by quickly competing requirements. You know, the contracts are done. You get the opportunity to focus on your requirements and companies have the opportunity to quickly and efficiently compete and provide better pricing based on a guaranteed minimum or a firm requirement that is going to be purchased by the contract, as opposed to the schedules, which are really that entry point where it provides them just an opportunity to compete.
Right. No, you hit the nail right on the head. The GSA is supposed to be securing fair and reasonable pricing because the best pricing is going to be achieved through the competition at the order level. But that's kind of got lost in the mix as you just described.
Right. Okay. And Jonathan, we have to take our break right now, but I want to pick up on that. You know, use the word the term best pricing. We'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. And you are my guest today is Jonathan Arney, partner at Shepherd Mullen. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
CACI delivers innovative information solutions and services to serve America's highest priorities, advancing efficiency and performance with business systems, countering the effects of complex threats with integrated security solutions, providing healthcare solutions for better, more affordable care, defending the nation against cyber threats, and helping veterans with its award-winning career-building program. CACI. Information deployed, solutions advanced, missions accomplished. CACI, ever vigilant.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jonathan Arney, a partner at Shepherd Mullen here in Washington, D.C., and a longtime, supporter of the GSA Schedules program, someone who's worked with the GSA Schedules for nearly two decades. Jonathan, when we took the break, you had mentioned that language of best price. And, I know you wanted to follow up a little bit on that, so I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, well, you mentioned best price and it happens to be a hot topic with me because you have a lot of contracting officers claiming in the middle of negotiations or renewal negotiations that they must achieve the officer's best pricing. And that raises a lot of concerns to me. First of all, it's just wrong. GSA, the statutory charge is to get fair and reasonable pricing, not best pricing, whatever best pricing means. But even putting that aside, what bothers me about this focus you see on, quote, best pricing is trying to figure out what the heck best pricing actually means. And it means, it clearly doesn't mean the lowest price on every product you sell all the time. Because no company that I've ever met could ever do that. You'd go out of business, right? Because someone's always getting a low price for a perfectly legitimate reason.
Sure. Yep.
And actually, so let's step back and think of it this way. Back to the question of what does best pricing mean? Okay. Let's say I'll ask you this question, Roger. So, in front of all your listeners here. So let's say
putting the pressure on me, John.
Yeah, a lot of pressure here. Let's say that that you have a deal. That Walmart's going to give you a deal, okay? And actually, you have two choices. You can get 10% off every product Walmart sells, or you can get, 5% off every product Walmart sells, or you can get 10% off half the products and 0% off the other half, okay? So those are two separate deals. Which one is the best pricing?
Now let me think about that for a moment.
I don't know. You can't answer it, right?
Yeah, no, I cannot answer it.
And yet, that's the type.
Depends on what gets back to like terms and conditions, right? Depends on which products get to 10% versus everybody getting the 5% and everything
probably
else.
Depends on which products. It depends on terms and conditions. It depends. That's the answer. It depends.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And when a contracting officer or a contracting specialist or an auditor tries to force companies to making a statement about best pricing and using GSA's magic language, most favored customer pricing or most favored pricing, it puts contractors in an untenable position because it's not a question that properly and fairly and accurately can be answered.
Right.
Yet GSA pushes companies to say, yeah, I'm giving you best pricing. Yeah, I'm giving you most favored customer pricing. And the moment you check off that box, DOJ is waiting around the corner to show you the one example where that's not true.
Right. Well, is it the fact that the language most favored customer confuses people? Because there's further language in the regulations that goes on to modify, most favored customer. Is that really what you're talking about?
Yeah. So Most favored customer is a term that I would never use in a document, and frankly, I won't let my clients use. It is a term that's just wrought with risk, and here's why. To a GSA contracting officer, most favored customer means you're getting a really good deal.
Right.
It actually doesn't mean best pricing to any contracting officer that's been around for a while. Yet, and any good contracting officer knows that there are very legitimate reasons by why some customers might get better pricing than GSA.
Sure.
And the regs contemplate better terms and different terms and conditions. You know, a whole host of reasons why a commercial customer might get a better deal. Yet you're still forced to use that confusing term most favored. And the moment you check off that box, you've said something that means something to people who weren't in the negotiation.
Sure.
And people who weren't in the negotiation interpret that as meaning lowest price in all situations, which is not true.
Well, Jonathan, what would you say to, you know, folks who would respond to what you have to say as well? You know, focusing on purely on the contractor's perspective and trying to ensure they don't have to give the government a good price. But
I would say that they're totally wrong.
Okay.
But here's why I would say that. Because there is, I am, as I said, I'm not against GSA trying to get the best pricing that they can get, subject to terms and conditions and such. Right?
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is let's use words that are clear. Let's use words that don't oversell. Let's use statements that are meaningful, and then let GSA do the job it has to negotiate fair and reasonable pricing, and let contractors make their representations and certifications in a manner that everyone understands what the terminology means.
Okay, and so do you think, you know, there's been some who, particularly at DOD, who say, hey, let's take the terminology fair and reasonable out of 8.4. I mean, I'm sure you've heard that kind of statement. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, I've heard that. I've also heard more talk about let's get the terminology most favored customer out of the GSA program. I mean, if we want to talk about getting rid of terminology, you know, I think that's the better place to focus. Fair and reasonable is it's a perfectly fine concept. We the government brings on contracting officers who are trained to make those judgments and to negotiate good pricing for the taxpayers and to negotiate good terms and conditions. And fair and reasonable is a term that I think makes sense to a lot of people, whereas
right.
most favored customer is actually the one that's highly susceptible to misunderstanding and has been for years. By the way, even if I recall, you'll correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure, but
sure.
Even the Mass Blue Ribbon
be happy
panel,
to correct you. No, go ahead.
Even the Mass Blue Ribbon panel, I think, found that the term most favored customer was problematic.
Yeah, I think it did. It goes to this, and I guess it goes to this issue of you said about, and this is sort of, I guess, contract geeky, but the idea
imagine
of
that.
Two of us, right?
Us talking about geeky stuff.
But the idea that, you know, focusing—it's almost there is a focus on those three words, most favored customer, and taking it out of context to the rest of the regulation. So, are you seeing, you know, how COs are, you know, looking at differences between terms and conditions and between GSA and commercial transactions?
No, sadly, I'm not. In fact, I think it's probably the biggest argument I have with COs lately, and it's not really with auditors so much, it's primarily with contracting officers, that so company goes in to get its schedule contract or negotiate its renewal, and it gives the government, you know, a whole host of data showing how it sells to its other customers, right? That's a standard
sure. yep.
commercial sales practice disclosure. And then what the company should do is identify some of the reasons why some of those customers might warrant lower pricing. And the regs say that the contracting officer has to consider those things, but they don't. And I've actually just recently had a contracting officer say to me, ask me to remove those descriptions from my submission. And I said, well, why would I not want to tell you that there are different terms and conditions at play here that justify lower pricing to this commercial customer?
Sure.
And the contracting officer said, well, because the CSP, the commercial sales practice format, says we want to see about your lowest pricing regardless of terms and conditions. Now, I'm getting a little geeky on you here, but that's an important phrase, okay? Regardless of terms and conditions. The CSP does say that in terms of what you have to disclose, meaning you disclose all these things, but then the regs tell the contracting officer they have to consider these differences in evaluating the fairness and reasonableness of the pricing, and it's that piece that gets lost. So when you say, am I seeing just a focus on the term as to opposed to the focus on the proper meaning of the term, the answer is there is a sad, narrow focus on the term without considering the whole meaning.
Yeah, that regardless language, it's you know, if you've interpreted it, alternatively, I guess you'd get to the point where the point is disclose, right? Regardless, you're supposed to disclose everything, right?
No, that's right. There are two different pieces that get merged. There's the disclosure requirement, right. And then there's what should be considered during the negotiation. The disclosure, you disclose practically everything. The negotiation, differences in terms and conditions must be considered, but they're sadly being considered less so than they should be.
Okay, Jonathan, you know what? We're already up to the next break. So when we come back, we'll continue to discuss the GSA Schedules Program, GSA in general, from a long, long storied career of Jonathan Arney working with GSA on the GSA Schedules Program in particular, and someone who's been a huge supporter of the program, as am I. So we'll be back in a few minutes after the commercial break. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jonathan Arney. He's a partner at Shepard Mullen. And Jonathan, we've been talking a lot about pricing and negotiation of pricing and some of the issues surrounding that. So in terms of most favored customer, considering differing terms and conditions, I was just curious, are you seeing any other areas with regard to the negotiation or other terms as part of the contracts that, the process has changed, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, I have. I'm seeing actually a bunch of them. And as I said earlier, I think the process has gone downhill. Another one that I always get on my soapbox about in this context is small business subcontracting plans. Now, this discussion is probably more focused on large businesses because they're the ones that have to complete these plans. And as I'm sure your listeners know, these plans have quite a noble purpose. They are to maximize opportunities for small business subcontractors. So I have no problem with the concept and the goal behind them, but the way they're being implemented, I think, tells a lot about the disappearance of flexibility and the disappearance of, in many cases, logic among the contracting officer community as compared to years ago. So let me give an example.
Yeah. So I don't even have to ask you. Go ahead.
Let's hear the example. I can see it in your eyes. So a subcontracting GSA is a model subcontracting plan that all large businesses have seen. And in this plan, there is what's called a flow-down requirement, and I know your listeners know what that is. It imposes obligations upon the prime to flow down certain regulations and requirements to the subs. One of these flow-down requirements in GSA's model form is that you have to require your subs to have a small business subcontracting plan of their own. Problem is, the regs make it clear that you do not have to flow down that requirement. You're exempt from that in a commercial items contract. Yet GSA Small Business Office keeps it in the model plan. So every single time that comes up to one of my clients, I have to engage in either letter writing or phone calls to try to explain to the GSA contracting officer or the small business liaison person that that flow down is not a requirement. And yet I come up again and again and again with a refusal to remove that requirement, even though it shouldn't be there. So that's one example of to me, it's just infuriating because, you know, I'm a rules guy. If the rule says it shouldn't be there, it shouldn't be there. And the fact that someone at GSA decided to put it in on his or her own just doesn't work for me. Right.
Wouldn't that, you're a rules guy, wouldn't that involve like a change in statute or change in?
Well, at the very least, it should be a change in the regulation.
Right.
I mean, remember that the commercial items rules were designed in many ways to minimize the burden of the regulations on the community.
Right.
And this is an example where, notwithstanding the fact that it shouldn't be there, you just see certain people in GSA small business office insisting that it should be.
Are there other aspects to the subcontracting plan?
Yeah, actually, there's another big one that drives a lot of big companies crazy. Now, I grant you, small companies might see this one a little differently, but it's the requirement let me back up. So in your plan, you have to propose goals, subcontracting
yes.
goals, as you know, and then you have to undertake good faith efforts to meet those goals. Well, many within GSA, and I can say many because this issue has come up multiple times every year with me for many years, believe that a contractor should have to use the federal government's subcontracting goals in the contractor's plan. As you know, the federal government has its own subcontracting goals.
Yes. Yeah.
They're not imposed upon the contractor, but nonetheless, GSA small business people take the position that, no, you should follow those goals. Even where they make no sense to the type of company or the geography, you know, the place where the company's operating in the United States, that might be less capability to get small businesses.
Sure.
And again, it's like arguing with a broken record. I've had these arguments with GSA where they insist on using the federal government's goals, even though there's no way in heck we could ever make those goals. We could never meet them. And the GSA person comes back and says, well, don't worry, they're just goals. And then I have to remind the GSA person that, no, they're not just goals. These are numbers to which we're going to be held accountable to some extent. And right. and if we consistently don't make them, that can even impact our past performance.
Yes. Yep.
Right? So it's not just that they're just goals. And, you know, and the example I sometimes give them, which I have yet to be successful in this line of argument, but it works for me, is I ask them, do you know why NASA and the Department of Energy have different small business goals from, say, the Small Business Administration? Right? And the answer is because they buy different sorts of things.
Yes.
Right? And
yep.
people don't want to buy a nuclear power plant from Bill and Ted's nuclear emporium in their garage. So there's different reasons. Different entities are situated differently, and one size does not fit all. Same thing with the contracting community, but that gets lost on this foolish consistency to goals that really don't apply.
Isn't it also, or just I'll ask you, you know, there's some context here, right, too. You're talking about, in most cases, commercial firms, that the federal government is a small percentage, you know, although the federal government likes to talk about it being the biggest buyer, you know, but... You know, here it's a small percentage of a company's overall sales. And in a certain sense, the GSA is asking, or the small business representative, more likely,
right,
is
right.
not necessarily GSA, is asking the company to theoretically change its business operations that impact sales across the world for purposes of, you know, being, I guess, compliant, for lack of a better term, for a subcontracting plan, or having an aggressive plan that represents, you know, 1 or 2% of their total sales or something like that.
You're exactly right. I actually had an auditor recently tell me that my client should change the way it reports revenue internally in order to be more consistent with the industrial funding fee rules. Now, it's a multi-billion dollar company, and the auditor thinks that I can press a button and change the way we report revenue for SEC purposes to meet the IFF rule. And I'm trying to explain to this auditor that, you know what, it's really the other way around. We're supposed to be able to follow our standard commercial practices. And the GSA schedule program is supposed to accommodate that. So, Roger, your point, again, is right on the money. To think that major contractors have to – obviously they have to change the way they do business to some extent, because the compliance obligations require unique infrastructure. I get that. Hey, but for some of these points like we're talking about here, it doesn't make sense to have contractors change their entire reporting structure, for example.
Sure. And are there any other areas with regard to, audits or, I mean, not audits, but terms and conditions and negotiations that have struck you?
Yeah, there's probably one more that's worth mentioning, and because I've been seeing this a lot recently. It relates to, so a little bit ago, I mentioned the commercial sales practice format, the
sure.
CSPF, mm-hmm. which, as we know, is the form you fill out to get on schedule and to renew your contract. Well, there are regulations that prescribe how you fill out this form.
Mm-hmm.
But lately what I'm seeing is a lot of acquisition centers are creating their own additional forms, and they're demanding that contractors give information in precisely their format. And, and people like me, we come back and we say, no, wait a minute. The regs say that I can give you these data in the format of my choosing. And the regs specifically say that. I don't have to follow the CSPF form. I can give it to you in whatever way works for my standard practices. And yet I'm having some COs and auditors say absolutely not. And again, it puts the contractors in an untenable position, because sometimes a different format is necessary to make sure the information is
fully
accurate
disclosed,
and fully
right,
accurate
right.
and honest and complete. And sometimes you need notes and you need footnotes and you need
sure.
Description. And to have a CO say, oh no, you can't add any notes to our format. Well, you know what? If as a contractor, if you listen to advice like that, you will find yourself on the receiving end of a DOJ investigation in the future, questioning why you didn't explain it more fully.
And I don't think you're going to be it's not going to work to say, well, the CO told me not to.
Okay. That's right.
I mean, you will say that. But
right. But remember, if it's not in writing, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And in this scenario I'm telling you about here, Roger, I actually went back to the CO and I said, you know what? If you put that in writing to us that you will not let us put our descriptions in, then we will abide by your advice. But other than that, we're going to describe.
Sure.
And
sure.
The CO refused to give that direction in writing.
All right, well, Jonathan, we're up against the break. Boys, this is a fast-moving show today. So when we come back, I want to ask you, it's been a while since you've been on the show, but I want to ask you about the relatively recent role of management within the GSA Schedules program.
I cannot wait.
Okay, well, when we come back, we'll be talking more to Jonathan Ernie, partner at Shepherd Mullin, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The mission of government involves critical efforts to improve national defense, economic security, health services, and citizens' lives. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to help government address cyber threats, reform the financial system, modernize infrastructure, and protect our nation. For nearly 100 years, Booz Allen has partnered with clients to deliver results that endure. To see Booz Allen's ideas in action, visit BoozAllen.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Jonathan Ernie. Jonathan is a partner at Shepherd Mullin, and Jonathan, when we took the break, I mentioned, I know there's an audit report earlier this year that focused on the role of management in the contract negotiation process on GSA Schedules contracts, and I know you have some thoughts in that area and what that role should or shouldn't be, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to address that.
Yeah. So I think most of your listeners probably saw that the Office of Inspector General took issue with GSA management for allegedly interfering with contracting officers' authority. And it's interesting, the IG found that interference is ruining the morale among GSA scheduled contracting officers. I mean, I've talked to a lot of contracting officers, and with due respect to my friends at the IG's office, if you ask them what's ruining the morale among the contracting officer ranks, it's the IG.
Okay, I'll let you handle it.
You're not going to talk on that one. Yeah. Look, I have, believe it or not, because I'm adverse to the IG a lot, I have very high respect for a lot of the people in the IG's office. But there's no question that they have become much more aggressive against contracting officers over the years. And then this report really just kind of exacerbated that view. But more importantly, what it's done is it's really rendered, to a great extent, it's rendered GSA management impotent to really control, oversee the contracting officer ranks, and to fix problems as they arise. You know, in days past, I mean, look, there are a lot of great COs out there, but let's not pretend there are also some not great COs out there. And in the past, where you had problems with COs who didn't understand the rules or were being, inappropriately dogmatic, you could go to management and you could get a fair hearing, if you will, and management would do what all good management does. It makes sure that people are making the right decisions on the right bases. Now, that's not interfering. That's being a good manager. But what you're seeing since the IG report is that management is petrified to do anything that could be considered interfering. And what that has caused is it caused the COs, those COs out there who are not doing a good job, to just operate with impunity.
And so have you experienced that directly yourself? With dealing with GSI?
I have definitely experienced it multiple times. And look, I don't want anyone to mistake what I'm saying. There are still some great COs out there. There are some great auditors out there. I might disagree with the auditors a lot, but on the whole, you know, I find them to be fair. But I am seeing time and again lately, to your direct question, Roger, that management, where they would have stepped in the past to right a wrong, is afraid to step in now.
So how would you fix that? What would you do if you were, king of GSA for a day? Okay.
I suspect I would not be elected as king of GSA or appointed for that matter. But look, I would, the GSA IG report recognized that management should step in where there is wrongdoing on the part of contracting officers. But the truth is that's not the right standard. Like, if I manage a lot of attorneys, right? If I only stepped in when there was blatant wrongdoing, you know, I'd never step in.
You'd probably lose your job too, right?
I would. I mean, it would be malpractice. That's not the standard. Managers are supposed to manage, and everyone, myself included, has room to get better. We all make mistakes. That's where managers come into play. And so, I guess if I were king, I would tell the managers that the IG report should not prevent them from doing their job.
Right. Okay. That's fair enough. So, you know, with regard to GSA and the schedules program and the role of the IG or audits, I know you're someone who has, as you mentioned, you have the IG's office plays a valuable role within the government and within GSA, and its job is important. And I for one had the opportunity to work with the GSA IG when I was at GSA, and I think we did some good things. Can you talk a little bit about the audit process and how that works and what you're seeing?
Yeah, yes, I can. And I'm glad you mentioned what you mentioned, because, you're right. I deal with the IG every day, and there are some great people there. We don't always agree on the substance or the facts, but, you know, it's a critically important function. And as a taxpayer, I want there to be an IG.
Absolutely.
Right. GSA has an interesting relationship with the IG, which is different from other agencies. But by the way, the GSA IG is involved in far more programmatic functions than other IGs would be, where they're only focused on, quote, fraud, waste, and abuse.
Okay.
And that creates a very interesting dynamic. You'll see the GSA IG involved in not only post-award and pre-award audits, but intimately involved in contract negotiations. And you don't see that in other agencies, where the IGs have a slightly different function. That creates a lot of interesting discussions and confusions, and kind of what wondering where allegiances lie in any given meetings or discussions.
Sure. And I mean, are you, I'm trying to understand what you mean there. In the context of the IG's role, like I know, you know, there's the DOD IG, then there's DCMA, then there's DCAA. You know, it seems like they're more operational functions versus the IG who has an oversight function. Is that what you're alluding to
Right. So inspectors general are not supposed to be operational. They're not supposed to be programmatic. They're supposed to be oversight. They're looking for fraud, waste, and abuse. And as I said, I think it's a quite important function that incidentally IGs do very well. Whether I like it or not. but they're traditionally not involved in operations. They're not involved in setting pricing policy. They're not involved in negotiating contracts. And if you were to ask the IG, they would say, we don't do that. We're not involved in operations. We don't negotiate pricing. But in practice, because of how closely they are embedded in these discussions, they actually do end up negotiating contracts, negotiating pricing, sitting next to the contracting officer in negotiations, de facto making pricing policy from time to time.
So why is that a problem?
Well, it's a problem for a number of reasons. Institutionally, one could say it's a problem because it could create a conflict for the IG, which is what the IG would have a hard time when its oversight function, if the things it's overseeing, it was involved in doing. So that's probably the most obvious answer as to the problems. It also changes it changes the nature of who you're negotiating with, right? The contracting officer is the one that has the authority. The GSAIG is supposed to advise. Now, every GSAIG auditor I know will say they're advising, but there's advice and then there's advice. You know, if the advice is, hey, this is my advice and you better take it, well, it's hard to see why that's advice and not direction at that point.
That's what you think's going on now?
Well, certainly not with every IG auditor, and certainly not across the board. But I'm seeing a lot more than that. And it's interesting because there was another recent IG report where the IG took GSA contracting officers to task for not doing everything the IG recommended. So for example, the IG conducts an audit and recommends X dollars of what they call cost avoidance.
And an audit of a
Contractor, okay. Right. Mm-hmm. An audit of a GSA schedule contractor. GSA does an audit, recommends cost avoidance. In other words, GSA auditors recommend lower prices. And the contracting officers then have to agree or disagree with the findings, with the recommendations.
Sure.
So as it turns out, this probably won't surprise you. Do you think the contracting officers agree or disagree with the IG auditor's recommendations?
I guess in this case, they disagree.
Well, interesting. I think you're right. They disagree, but they say they agree.
Oh, okay.
So on their official form, they say, we agree with all the findings. But then in practice, they only actually recover 36% of the auditor's recommendation.
Okay.
So now the IG says what that means is they're not doing their jobs. I actually think what it means is they're saying they agree with the auditor when they don't fully agree with the auditor.
Really?
That's my view. I mean, I've talked to a lot of contracting officers and they are quite scared of the auditors.
Well, hey, can we?
I understand.
We need to end on a positive
we
note.
Do.
So I want to give you a minute. We have a minute left to let you say something sort of nice.
Sure, I'll say something. Well, so look, it's been 20 years of saying nice things.
Okay.
The fact that you've given me,
that's a good point.
A couple minutes to point out some of the negatives is a drop in the bucket. But look, unless people are willing to talk about the negatives, unless people are willing to point those out, then the program has no chance of succeeding, right? I still think the program can succeed. There are some great people there. There are great contracting officers. But the only way it's going to succeed is to point out some of these troubling evolutionary changes and talk about them and try to fix them. Because if we just stand by and leave well enough alone, there won't be a schedules program to leave alone.
All right. Well, on that note, well, you're really talking about a Mythbusters conversation with everybody, with the entire community about the GSA Schedules program, and I think that would be a wonderful thing. So I want to thank my guest, Jonathan Ernie. He's a partner at Shepherd Mullen, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.